Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Hello, Hello World podcast with me, Candace. Today's episode is uber special and rather important. It's a little cross local love. Also, giving you a full informative episode. We have Miss Amanda from Quilly Bean. Amanda makes the most beautiful little crocheted handmade and crocheted dolls, exclusively sold at the Urban Market. Check her out and her lovely creations. Just the color scheme she uses and her style is so completely adorable. We also, it was very important for me to touch base with her on mental health, self-love. As we all know, mental health wears many, many hats. It looks different ways for different people, and Amanda has a truly inspirational and honest perspective, and she's always so willing to share her struggles and her happiness on her social media, and I am so happy and honored to be able to speak to her on my show. I super duper know you're going to learn something from this episode. Grab yourself some water, and thanks for listening.
This is Jacob from the Sunday Night Army podcast. On my show, you can discover new independent music, deep dive into the artist's creative process with interviews, meet interesting celebrities, and challenge your opinion on current events with my commentary on the world today. Find the Sunday Night Army anywhere you stream your podcasts.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, I'm so sorry.
It's no one's fault. It's technology and I'm not good at it.
Same.
Oh my gosh. I'm so glad it worked. Yay. Hi.
Yay. Hi.
Speaking today with Miss Amanda Britton from, she's a lovely creator. The brand is called Quilly Bean. We love and know her stuff very, very well. Thank you for being here with me today, my friend.
Thank you for asking me. I'm still in shock, but thank
you. Yes. I mean, of course I follow along with your creative journey, but I also like to watch your posts about the rivalry in your home regarding football and when your dogs are sick. Like, I know you, I feel as though, you know, we're attached at the hip because
I love it. Yeah.
We've met before. I saw you with Mr. Quill at Chapters and I couldn't help myself but say hi. So we've talked in person, but this is going to be fun. There's so much that I want to talk about, and I know you're a huge advocate for a lot of things. Mm-hmm. I got to start somewhere. So let's talk about your business, Quilly Bean, and what we make and where do we sell?
Okay. So I make, it sounds really silly when I describe it, but I make dolls and crocheted toys. my goal is to make keepsake items. I am not, personally, I'm not very sentimental, but I do have two dolls from my childhood. One my father gave me and one is handmade. And those are basically the only two things I have from my childhood. So I really wanted to make that so that when people saw it, they would be like, oh, I want this for my kid for years, which is what I would like. excuse me. And I sell at the Urban Market and custom orders.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. So talk to me a little bit about those two dolls. Are they symbolic of happy feelings?
excuse me. The one is a is it a Wrinkles dog? You know, the one that was a puppet and it came in like a dress?
I do.
I remember, again, I have like horrible memories. I don't remember a lot from my childhood, but I remember that day and my dad just took it out of a Canadian Tire bag and I I loved it. I don't know why I kept it. But I, it's just, it's, she's super cute. And the other one is a girl with red hair and a cute little gray dress. And I named her Tiffany because at the time that was my favorite girl name. I don't remember who gave it to me. I just knew, I knew that it was special because it was like handmade.
Interesting. And you've kept those things through your whole life.
Yeah. And I'm not one, like I don't keep stuff. I hoard stuff, but I don't keep stuff.
There's a difference, y'all.
There is a difference. I hoard yarn for sure.
Mm-hmm. We know. Anyone who follows you, we know this. And I'm always like, show us the yarn. Show us the abundance.
I try not to show Simon, but sometimes he's home when the yarn arrives and I'm like, oh. Ooh. Yeah.
That could be a good reel. Like, oh my God. Simon's actual reaction to the yarn haul.
Oh man, he's pretty good. I have a project for my amigurumi, like this, the thinner cotton yarn. It's gotten out of control, so we need to reorganize it. And I showed it to him the other day, and he's like, "How?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I don't. I can't explain it. But here it is. So you got to fix it because I can't."
Yeah, seems like such a helpful lad. That's for
sure. He is. And he's an engineer, so he's used to problem solving and he's a very good organizer. I am not.
Okay.
So yeah, we've tried to work together with that, but then I kind of just back out of the room and then come back an hour later and it's done. So great.
Perfect. There's a method. Yeah.
Exactly.
And the things that you make, your most recent were the cutest little emoji faces.
I'm obsessed with them.
And dolls. I'm just to give the listeners some information about. But even at Christmas, you made these really cool trees, which were very different from what you typically make, I would say. And I loved them.
Yeah, thank you for noticing. I like making them, actually.
Yeah, those were really, really cute. I saw them at the urban market, actually. Also, to bring up the fact that you're so open and honest about how you ordered all that yarn, the colors, didn't know what it was for.
Oh my God, still don't.
You still don't?
I don't, but I have so much of it. I can't figure it out. Gosh, I don't know.
I thought for sure you would have figured it out by now.
No, I'm using it up, but I know that it's not for that reason.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also very open about projects that you wish you hadn't started. It's just, it's so awesome and honest at the same time. Oh gosh. So sold at the urban market. What a cool spot that is. I mean, anyone who hasn't been, go check it out. They sell local goodies from different makers in the city. Mm-hmm. Now when you sell your stuff at urban market, sometimes you work there too, right?
Yes. My contract is one day a month that Quilly and I go there for the day.
Right. So you get to go there. And my point of asking that is how cool it is. You don't have your own brick and mortar, say, but you get to go in there and experience people firsthand enjoying and looking at your things. How cool is that?
Yeah. Like the last time I was there, someone came in specifically for something that I made. And I'm like, I don't understand what I'm like. Sometimes people will buy something when I'm there and I won't tell them that I made it because it's awkward. But this person came in, she's like, "Hi, I follow you on Instagram." And she just walked right into the baby room and then she picked up the lamb lovey and she's like, "I came here for this." And I'm like, oh my God, like, I can't, this is not real life. Like, I can't believe that that people want things that I make. Like,
yeah.
So it's a really cool experience. I like working at the urban market. I still can't believe that I was asked. But yeah, here we are almost a year later.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That was going to be another question I had. So of course you said the dolls inspired you, but what has this been something you've done your whole life is creating and just now you're selling it in a store, or how did that come about?
So this leads right into mental health. I'm not sure if that's how you want to go in. Okay. So, I was taught to knit when I was younger. And I did it for a while and then I just kind of stopped. Crocheting happened about 4 or 5 years ago. I picked it up because I needed to have a distraction, like to be quiet. I needed, because in crocheting you count a lot. You're always counting in rounds. So I'm always, I even find now if I'm just like walking down the street, I'm just counting like nothing. I just count all the time. So it keeps the other half of my brain relatively quiet. It also keeps my hands busy. And so I, and then I feel productive at the same time. So it's, it gives my day a little bit of purpose. Mm-hmm. Even though it's just crocheting. So yeah, I just started with dishcloths and cup cozies, and that didn't really fill my creative desire. So then these dolls, I don't even know, I don't have kids, I'm not ever going to have them, but I like making dolls for kids. It's just, there's so much detail you can add to it. And I just, I really want like characters and books to be brought to life. And so then that's how it morphed into the dolls. Because like with crocheting, you can do anything. Like I could veer off into just home goods or self-care or clothes or hats or mitts. Like it's, you know, you can do so many different things, blankets. But for me, I've just decided to focus on the dolls. And I'll do some fun other stuff, you know, on the side. But like to focus purely on bringing enjoyment to kids is what I would like. So that's how it started. I started as nothing, just to keep my brain quiet. And now it's this.
Okay. Does it still keep your brain quiet?
It does. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Simon knows, like if he sees me crocheting at like a weird time of day, cause I have my set times. Yeah. He's like, so we're okay. I'm like, am I crocheting? He's like, yeah. I'm like, then we're not good. So just let me count for a little bit and then we'll be fine. Cause before crocheting, what I would do is I would tap my fingers and I would count syllables and letters. So I'm always trying to distract myself with counting for some reason.
Okay.
Even though I'm horrible with math.
Yeah.
Like horrible.
I find myself, this is a little off topic, and I mean, this is not an interview on me, but I find myself when I walk down steps, and so I always count no matter what. I don't, now that you're saying that out loud, I don't think I've ever really said it that out loud. But I do.
And does it have to be like an even number? Because like for me, numbers have to, like the volume on the radio has to be an even number.
Wow.
Or a five, because then you can split that in half. But like, girl, that kind of stuff. Or if I'm like going down the steps and it's an odd number, or food, if I have like M&M's and there's an odd number, I can't finish the last one.
It's quite interesting. I love learning and hearing about that, because we all have our own things and they could be labeled or classified whichever way, but when you talk about them, it brings normalcy to it.
Yeah.
Because honestly, I've never thought that it was even something that I needed to share, that I count when I walk, but I do. Wow. Okay. Did you take anything post-secondary? Did you do anything? I feel as though you would have done something in a creative arts type.
I did not. I remember walking out of high school saying, peace out. Like,
oh,
I'm done. Yeah, I had the opportunity because I took a law co-op course, so they were willing to keep me on if I went to school to be a legal secretary. Looking back, I probably should have, because I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
But I was just so done, and I just started traveling. So I spent a large portion of my 20s just going to different countries and experiencing that.
Really? Just, I didn't know that.
Yeah, just working to travel. So I lived at home. I had a house cleaning business, and I just would work until I had enough money. Then I would travel and my mom would take over. I'd come back. And that lasted basically till I met Simon.
Okay.
that I would do that. Yeah. So I didn't go to university or college, but I've had like really crazy creative jobs that I'm like, don't you want me to have some education for this?
No. Like, not always necessary. It's really not always necessary.
it actually works out to your benefit sometimes to not. And honestly, YouTube is one of the greatest teachers. Like, I've learned almost all of my skill off of that. Because, like, when I was a makeup artist, I got really good training at the companies that I worked at. But then if I wanted to keep up on it, I would just YouTube something and learn that way.
See, that's what I'm feeling then, the makeup artist. I mean, I don't obviously know everything about you, but I could sense that there was some type of creative past. And I mean, I went to university well after high school. I took a break and I didn't even graduate. So it doesn't mean anything.
Exactly.
It does mean things when people are passionate about something and they go, I'm not downgrading school, but I mean, for folks like you and I just think that it was more important to count our steps.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Where was your favorite place that you traveled? I'm so curious.
So pre-marriage, Haiti. I lived in Haiti for a while. I had friends that lived in Camp Perrin. So I was there before one of the wars started. And it was like a time when internet was like super sketchy. So like, I wouldn't check in cause I'd have to like go to a cafe and it wasn't close. And so I wouldn't check in often. And when I did, the news over in this part of the world was saying that like the people were like revolting and taking over police stations. And I'm like, everything's fine here. Like I'm having an amazing time. It was so beautiful, like in like a third world way. And like you went to bed, super simple living, like when you went to bed when the electricity was shut off and you woke up when the sun came up. You had to take a nap because it was so hot in the afternoon. But I actually was going to move there. I had a roommate and everything set up, and then I was going to teach English online, and then I met Simon. So I was going to 100% because it was just, yes, third world living is my jam. I love it.
Interesting. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I loved it. So pre-marriage, definitely Haiti. Post-marriage, my home is in Belize. I would live there in a millisecond.
Huh. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Both countries I've never been to. I've traveled quite a bit too, but I have not traveled to those two countries. Haiti does seem very beautiful from what I've researched.
Oh yeah, it's gorgeous. And it's beautiful in many different ways, you know? Like it's beautiful in how simple living can be and how simple happiness you can find it, you know? And it doesn't have to be from anything that you buy or receive, but just like your family comes over for a visit, or you're able to go to a village and teach somebody a new language. Like it's just that kind of, it was very similar in Belize. It was just very pure. And that's something that gets lost in first world living, I think.
Agreed, for sure. Before we get I'm obviously going everywhere with this interview, but
before we get into the heavy.
Yeah. I'm going to just wrap up with talking about your cute business, which we've already strayed from. What is the goal for Quilly Bean? What are we looking for the future?
So I have been creating some things. It's going to take me a while to get everything organized the way that I want, but I'm creating, I had mentioned it briefly before, but characters from books, bringing them to life. So when mommy and daddy in me time, when the parents or the partners are reading the book, the child has the character in their hands. So that's the end goal, but I want it to be I want to go into markets and have it an immersive experience. So I'll have the movie, if I don't even know if it's possible, but my goal is to have the movie, a kid's movie playing, so that when the parents bring their children to these markets, oftentimes it's not catered to them. They have a little section just for them.
So cute.
Yeah, that's the goal. So I just got to get first. I had to get past Christmas because Christmas whooped my butt. It was I've never experienced anything like that before. And then now I'm just kind of trying to play catch up at the shop because I really can't. It's not a bad thing, but it's really hard for me to keep stuff in the store because it sells, which is not a bad thing. It's just insane. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to stock that up. I have quite a few custom orders I have to do. And then once February is done, I'll be able to focus on the business plan that I have in my
brain. Awesome. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad to hear you that you have a business plan because and the opportunity for markets is in this city and it's just getting bigger. So
it's amazing. Yeah. And so it took me a while to realize that this is a business because I was approached and I didn't ever intend to sell my stuff, like ever. I've given away my stuff. I just as gifts, it makes me happy. So
yeah,
to have someone approach me for this, I had no idea. I'm not a business person. I make things. Like, so it's taken me a little bit to get my footing and I'm still not there yet, but it's getting there. I have a much clearer vision of instead of just crocheting any random thing to really streamline it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sounds great. I can't wait for that. I really can't. All right. You ready for my random questions I asked you last night?
I am ready. I think.
I like to write them specifically for each guest. So I have four written for you. I don't know. We'll see if I get to all of them. But I wrote four for you. Usually it's only three. But here we go, girl.
Okay.
You and your husband and your dogs are safe, but you have 1 minute to grab any one thing from your house before it, say, explodes. I think you probably already answered that earlier, but
like
can grab one thing.
One thing, my glasses. Because yeah. I'm blind without them. I would not be able to see at all. That's one of my fears.
So you can see the explosion.
Exactly.
Okay. That's a very simple answer. I was not expecting something so simple. But I love it. I love it. Okay. A popular destination place that you would never go to.
Italy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. My parents used to go there a lot and they're like, it's so beautiful. I'm like, I've got absolutely no desire to go to Europe, like at all. I've been there. I just don't want to go back to Italy. I've never been to Italy, but I just have no interest whatsoever.
Right. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. That's okay. You can wear only one color for the rest of your life. What color is it?
Black.
Yeah, girl. Mm-hmm. Knew it. Black. Okay, yes. Last one. A book that you think everyone would benefit from reading.
Oh. My favorite. My favorite book is Count of Monte Cristo.
Oh, ooh, really?
Yeah, yeah. But like the big one, not the,
yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why, but I just feel like everybody should read that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I've read it. So I might go downstairs and grab it and read it again. It's been a while, but wow. Ooh, I love all these answers. All right. I touched a little bit earlier about your advocacy for a lot of different things. Mental health being one of them. Of strong one and how openly honest you are about how you suffer mentally with yourself, if you will. I don't want anybody to think that I'm like calling you out. Like this is all self-acclaimed.
Oh no, I'm very open. Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very open woman. I feel like I've said this before too. There's so much power in speaking your truth and your strength. I feel like I personally have a lot of things to share too. I feel maybe like a hypocrite sometimes because I have so much to share and I don't. And I know people could learn and, get confidence through the things that I have to say, but, we're going to focus on you. And you also have touched on body dysmorphia.
Mm-hmm.
which to me was a new thing. So before I ask you questions, I also want to tell you this, that I look for signs from the universe or whomever is controlling the world. And this morning I woke up to a great friend of mine reposting a memory on Facebook, I think from 10 years ago, about her deceased dog Quill, which it happened. I will even send you a screenshot. I got full goosebumps. And then take my kids to school, I sat down to do some reflecting and some writing, and I see on the TV this commercial, and it's talking about body dysmorphia. I think it called it something else. Yeah. And I thought, oh, okay, that's definitely something that is standing out, because I know that, and I hadn't written it down in my notes to talk to you about it at all, but it's body dysmorphic disorder is what it was. I put it in my notes. Okay. So yes, those are the things that I want to talk to you about. Also, actually, let's talk about Quill first.
Okay.
Quill. Yeah. See, I'm going everywhere, but that's
okay. Right here.
Quilly. All right. Let's talk about Quill, because I think it's really important that people understand that Quill is not just a pet, and that he helps you. And yeah, talk about him and what he is to you.
Okay. So Quill is my service dog, in that I have a doctor's note. In Ontario, all that's required, which is frustrating, but all that's required is to have a doctor's note saying that you need one to navigate your illness. And so he is my service dog. He's trained for certain things. We still have a lot more training to do, but he's not, there's a difference between an emotional service dog and a service dog.
Okay.
Emotional service dog is just a pet, like, not to bring down anybody's emotional service animal, but they're just a pet, so they don't have the rights like Quill has. Quill can go everywhere, and you can't legally stop me from bringing him. So, and emotional service dogs are more of companions, whereas Quill is specifically trained for certain things. So he goes everywhere with me. He's my other half, even though I'm married to Simon. Quilly is always with me, like always. And he is a necessary part to not even melodramatically saying keeping me alive.
It's pretty intense. And yes. What, I mean, typically we would think that a service dog would be for somebody who is seeing impaired. Hearing impaired, maybe, or maybe, like you said, just an emotional support dog. I've seen that for veterans, things like that.
Right.
But how is he trained to be different, and what does he help you specifically with?
Okay. So before Quill, I was trapped in my home. Anxiety kept me here. I could go to work, but I had to come right home. Simon would have to go everywhere with me, which is exhausting because he works full time. I could not leave my house. Like, I would get dressed and everything, and then I would just, couldn't. So he first gets me back my life. So I'm able to leave the house with him, because it's a huge distraction. Like, him and I are always like checking in on each other, looking at each other. So I don't have time to worry about what, even though nobody is in my brain, what people are thinking about me as I walk wherever I'm going.
Okay.
So he gets me out of the house. He's been trained in deep pressure therapy. So if I do have an anxiety attack while I'm out, I sit down and he knows right away to lay across my legs and stay there until I'm better. He has been trained and is in training. If Simon and I get separated, I can say, go find Dad, and he'll go find Simon and bring him back to me. The bigger things that he will be trained for is unfortunately, I suffer from self-harming, and he will eventually stop me from doing that. So okay. when I'm at home, if I have like, I clench my hands or I tap, and he'll come up to me and just like put his nose on my hand to bring me back. Cause I disassociate a lot. And so he'll bring me back into the present, mm-hmm. by just a simple touch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. Now I have a really hard time with the word anxiety because I feel as though it's been thrown around, especially the last
yes.
little while. You hear that word, oh, I'm so much anxiety, and I'm probably guilty of it too. However, I do suffer from a little bit of anxiety. I've been diagnosed from mm-hmm. a professional psychiatrist. Very controlled though. I mean, you suffer from, that's clear that you suffer from crippling anxiety, and that is so unfortunate, but I'm so glad that you have Quill. I mean, what better than a bright golden retriever to help you? Oh my gosh,
he's always happy. He's always happy. Like, I can't if I woke him up right now, his tail would wag and he'd look at me and be like, what do you want, mom? Like, yeah, I'm happy to be here. He's amazing. I will only ever have one golden because they're a lot of work.
Yes.
But he's, yeah, like he's just, which helps him being happy. Cause you're right. Like when anxiety, I will never say that someone's anxiety is less than mine because right. everybody's own struggle is their yep. own struggle. Mm-hmm. The form that my anxiety takes is like I literally black out. My body cannot handle, or my mind cannot handle the fears that are rushing to my mind. Mm-hmm. And so I just, there will be before Quill, and even now sometimes there will be hours at a time that I do not recall. Or I'll end up somewhere and I'm like, I don't even know how I got here because okay. I just, or I cry, I hyperventilate, I feel things intensely, like I just, I can't breathe from the heaviness of the feelings. So there's fear and anxiety of the unknown, which I think a lot of people suffer from right now, but mine is the perceived. This is going to happen and it's going to be horrible. And I've already lived it through my anxiety.
Okay. So you're basically projecting.
Yes. Yes.
Have you suffered? And I say suffered because it sounds as though it's something that you still suffer with, but actively working on all your whole life. Is this something that you remember as a child going through?
Yes. Yeah. I remember like I was painfully shy, which you can't tell because I talk a lot on my stories, but like growing up, I could never buy anything. Like my brothers would have to, if I wanted something, they'd have to go purchase it for me at the restaurant. I could never tell people what I wanted. Yeah, like just painfully shy. I was taken out of school in high school because I couldn't go to school. It was just too much. The anxiety was horrible. So I can't remember a time when I wasn't anxious. It's just always there.
Excuse me. And are there certain situations that make it worse? I obviously going out in public, but I mean, do you have triggers? Do you think it's something that has been brought on because of a certain experience in your life?
I honestly don't know. I think because I've been diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, and okay. I feel like anxiety, depression disorder goes like hand in hand with it, and I think I had mm-hmm. that way longer than I mm-hmm. before I was diagnosed with it. So a large part I think it's just chemicals in my brain, like uh-huh. I just because it's so delusional, like it's not based on any kind of reality, but but it also feels like I'm living it, so it has to be real,
right?
It can't not be. So right. I've always had anxiety because I don't even know what this sounds like, but it always feels like I'm carrying the weight of everybody's problems on me, but nobody tells me their problems. I just look at them and think, you must be suffering from this. And I am terrified for you. Like it doesn't, excuse me. So it's like carrying the fear that everybody else has and the pain that they have, as well as your what own. I go through. Yeah.
And you said that you sometimes self-harm is, are those things that you do maybe when you're blacked out or?
No, I'm very well aware. Usually that happens when I just, it's either that or I kill myself. It's the two options. Like either today is the day that I kill myself or I self-harm and I can breathe for a few more days.
So self-harm gives you some sort of relief.
Yeah, not to glorify it, but yes.
Yeah, no, we're not glorifying it. I know a few people who have gone through that in the past, and everyone says collectively the same thing. It's the only thing that helps release that feeling other than ending it all. It's a very, very accurate depiction of what obviously people go through when they decide to self-harm.
Yeah, it's like I can take a deep breath finally, but like leading up to that, I couldn't catch my breath. But it's like literally when it happens, I'm like, and then I'm better. Not better, but like I can function again.
Yeah. Okay. And you talk about, I mean, you're gorgeous. You seem as though, you know, you just present yourself in such a beautiful way, whether, you know, you just, and your insides are gorgeous also. You are an empath, clearly. You just stated that, and you love other people and you take on their issues. And we all see this beautiful, confident, even though your words aren't confident all the time. But I know I have other friends, social media friends, that, you know, I've spoken to about you, trying to figure out how I knew you. That's
I know, and we still don't know how.
We still don't know. But they say the same thing. Oh, you know, I can't believe that she feels that way. So, you know, for anyone who doesn't really know what, on TV, it was called body dysmorphic disorder. Mm-hmm. It's basically picking out your flaws, a simple flaw, and just targeting that and thinking you're ugly and thinking, you know, having to constantly look at yourself in the mirror, thinking people are judging you. That must be exhausting. And I know me telling you that you're beautiful and Simon and everyone saying that you're this amazing person, it doesn't help. I'm sure it's kind, but I know that it just falls on deaf ears.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me about it. Tell me about that.
So
the struggle.
Yeah. It's been, my literally, I can't remember a time when I could look in the mirror and be like, I like this about me. Even to today, I have to limit my time, picking my face in the mirror. Like I have to set a timer because I would just be there for hours going over and over and over my face.
I'm sorry, did you say picking your picking, face? Cut yeah, out. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, picking my face. Okay. So there's that. I can't go past a mirror without like lifting up my shirt and making sure that I haven't gained 10 pounds in the last time that I looked.
Okay.
Because I'm convinced that I have. Like I'm going to look at myself and I'm going to be 10 pounds heavier, and how am I going to handle that?
Okay, so your weight, you focus on your weight a lot.
Yeah. Like I can tell you all the, like, I hate my nose, I hate my chin, I hate my legs, my arms are disgusting. Like I just, there's, I am, like, people say really nice things to me, and I either feel like it's because they know me and they feel like they have to, or they say that because they've seen me through a filter, and it's not an accurate portrayal of what I look like. But even growing up, like even when I was severely anorexic, if I was to go into a clothing store, I would automatically go to, and I'm not saying this is a large size, but like I would go to a size 12 and assume that that would be what fit me. But at the time I was like a size 4, but I wouldn't even look at the 4s. I'm like, there's no way that I'm going to fit into that. I'm a 12. That's what I am. And you couldn't convince me of that. But that being said, like, even though weight for like I'm focused on my weight, I do not see it in other people. And that's the thing with body dysmorphia. It's so self-centered.
Yes, it is. It very much is.
It's all about me. Like, I think I have friends that are heavier than me, and I talk about it, and it's not until after that I'm like, oh, I hope they don't think that I think that about them, because I do not, you know, like I don't, I think they're gorgeous and they're way more beautiful than I am. And I don't understand why they're my friends, because why would you want to be with me? I'm embarrassing and gross. Like, you'd have to explain, like, this is like a pity case. This is why you feel bad for me. That's why you're my friend. Yeah. So it's like a, it has been way worse in the past, but it's like it's a constant thing.
Yeah. It seems very tiring. Mm-hmm. And I was another question I had, if you had ever suffered with a eating disorder.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very active. From grade 7 until today. I don't think it ever really goes away, but grade 7 it manifested itself.
Sure. Pretty hard. Yeah. My father went through a recovery program for something totally different than an eating disorder, but throughout that program and his time spent at the place he was at, he said that the amount of women and men that were in there for eating disorders far outweighed the drug or sex addiction or alcohol addiction. He said it was really crazy, and to see the different ways that it affects these people's bodies and their mental health really suffer because of it. And it's a really hard thing to overcome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I, another question for you, this might be a little bit personal, but do you think that you will ever love yourself?
No, don't even have to think about it. No,
no. No.
No.
Do you believe that other people can love you?
No.
No. Okay. Well, I think Quill definitely loves you.
That's because I got hot dogs in my pocket all the time.
Well, this is like, it's just amazing to hear you laugh and feel happy, because I that's obviously what we want for our friends and our acquaintances. And I hope that, you know, one day that there can be some type of lifted weight from your shoulders, as you described earlier, to this sensation and this feeling that you constantly feel. And I mean, you're not just going to wake up one day and say, "Woo, I'm fresh and new." Like, obviously not. But I think actively working on talking about it and stuff helps to heal a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, just being open with any kind of struggle, any kind, it makes one person feel heard if they don't have their voice. You know, like, that's why I'm so open. I don't get close to people, but I'll tell you my life story, because I think it's really important that we know each other's life stories. Like, why not? For me, because I look a certain way, but I have this disorder, these disorders, no one has ever not taken me seriously, but like, they haven't. You know, like, well, you have a good life. I know I have a good life. I don't deserve it, is what I believe. I don't deserve that I have all this good in my life. I don't deserve it. So it's not me not appreciating the good that I have in my life. I just think someone else should have it, not me. And then with Quill, so he's got the service vest on, and it says service dog in training, because I'm too scared to take the training off. People automatically assume that I'm the trainer. So I can't even tell you how many times I've been asked, "Oh, is it going to be really difficult, you know, to give him up when it's time?" And I'm like, no, he's for me. And oh, this is the conversation every single time. Well, what for? Well, he's for me. Yeah, but for what? He's a psychiatric service dog. Yeah, but for what? I said, and then usually I'm just done. I'm like, because I try and kill myself all the time. Like, what do you want? I'm trying to be polite and not make it awkward for you, but also you're making it awkward. So, and then they're like, oh, and there have been so many times, but one specific time, a guy came up to me in a grocery store and asked what clothes were. And so I told him, and he looked at me and he said, honey, there are girls far uglier than you that should kill themselves. You know what I'm saying? And then walked away.
Wow. That doesn't help.
Really. And I'm like, oh, so you think I'm pretty, so then I don't have problems.
Right. Like,
and that happens all the time. Oh, but you're so pretty. Oh, yeah. Okay. So then I'm better.
Like, right. If it were that easy, right?
Yeah. But I don't think that of myself. And my brain chemicals tell me differently. Like, it's not about looks. Like, it's
no,
it's and that's not. What I find really hard is I'm not
right.
I went so long with nobody noticing because I'm able to do my hair, I can put my makeup on, I like clothes, so I can find ones that match. Like, I don't look homeless, I don't look like I just had a manic episode, you know? Like,
yeah. You were very good at like the facade, if you will.
Yeah. So mental illness does not look one specific way. And I'm so passionate about bringing awareness to that.
Yes. Yes, I know. And that's why I think it was really important that we had this conversation today, because mm-hmm. My words exactly. Mental illness does not look one way. It has lots of different hats that it wears. And this is just the epitome to me of, no one is ever going to be prepared for the things that you just said mm-hmm. if they don't know you, because it's pretty deep and it's really honest. Mm-hmm. There's so much strength in that. I admire you for that. I really do.
Yeah. Well, I also can't really, like, in the summertime, I can't hide it. My arms tell a story for sure. So it's usually, it's a lot easier to talk about in the summertime. In the wintertime, I'm covered up, so you can't really tell. But I want to have conversations, because if I had somebody, one person have something similar to me growing up, I wouldn't have felt so different. Mm-hmm. You know, and being different isn't a bad thing, but being mentally ill different is.
Yes.
Because
especially at an age where you know, you don't talk about those types of things with friends, but it could very, very well likely have been that somebody else was feeling your way, Amanda, and they just didn't know how to say it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, but why not, you know, like, just, it doesn't have to be all the time. Like,
right.
I don't talk about it all the time, like not even every day. Because it's heavy. It's really heavy. And I'm okay with carrying that load myself most of the time. But, I do also want to talk about it and normalize it, not be like, I don't know. I want people to say, hey, I'm having a bad day, and talk about that.
Yeah.
You know? Like, don't try and solve it, because you can't.
That's right. You're
not medical professionals, but let them talk, because that's all that they want. They just need to be heard.
And do you find that people reach out to you based on the content you put out there? Do you find that people reach out to you? And I mean, like, not compare, but tell you if they're going through something? Like, do you get good feedback?
Yes. And that is what, like, that's the reason that I keep talking, because I was raised, even though I had a wonderful childhood, I think oftentimes we carry our parents' trauma without knowing what that trauma is. And so I carried my mother's trauma from her childhood. I don't know what that was. So that made me always pretend that everything was fine, you know? But it wasn't. And I never talked about it, because you don't talk about those things because they're scary and people don't know how to help. And it's just, you just don't talk about it.
Yeah.
And then I'm just like, if I don't talk about it, I will not be here. I'm not making a big statement. That is a fact. I will not be here. So then I started talking about it and being super hyper aware that I'm telling my story. Every single time I will get at least 4 messages saying thank you, or I'm feeling the same way, or this is how I'm feeling, but thank you for making me feel, you know, that I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
And other people that are like, yeah, I don't follow you, but I check in all the time because I need to know what you're saying, but I will follow you because it means so much. And I'm like, oh my goodness. Yeah. Thank you. This, it's super hard to put it out there, mm-hmm. but it is 1,000% worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. I'm so glad that you do, because it just brings awareness to, it brings awareness to the fact that people suffer daily from mental health. And you said, you know, you don't talk about it every day, but we need to remember that you suffer with it every day. Mm-hmm. So.
And the mental health system is horrible. It is not built to actually view it as an illness. And that is just so sad.
Yeah.
So I want people to be aware that the healthcare, although we have good healthcare here, the mental healthcare is not even close to where it should be.
No, it's not. It's really not. What advice would you give to someone who is struggling with mental health? Obviously, I'm going to tag you where you can be getting a hold of, but what medically or support group wise, where would one look?
So it depends on the age. Like, I know the hospital has their crisis center, but there's also Noah's House in Windsor. I think they're on Pelletier, or I don't know how you say that. And her, the creator, the founder of Noah's House, her son committed suicide. And so they have counselors on site, and like a place for, I think it's like adolescent to 25.
Right.
But I'm sure they wouldn't turn you away.
No,
but like,
kidding.
It's a place for people to go that's safe and they can feel understood. And that's within Windsor. So for me in Windsor, so when I was in Guelph, I had amazing care, They had the Homewood,
which that's where my dad went.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I had a specialist in there for quite a few years. And her help actually lasted for over a decade, where I didn't need anybody. But I remember coming here and being like, okay, I'm just going to set up somebody just in case I have, you know, a backslide. And he said, like, I told him what I needed and he said, I can't help you. And I'm like, well, then what are you? Okay. So then I just didn't find anybody. And then when I ended up the last 2 times trying to kill myself, I ended up in the hospital for a while. And when I got released, Simon had a psychiatrist already set up, and my previous experience with a psychiatrist was amazing, but now they only medicate.
Yeah.
And they only see you for 15 minutes every 3 months. So you need a psychiatrist as well as a psychotherapist to help retrain your thinking and give you a safe environment while you do so.
Yes.
There are people available here. But for me, I just, I've had really bad experiences with people telling me they can't help me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there are homes. Like I strongly recommend Noah's House. I think they're doing amazing work. And a mother through her pain is able to help. I start crying. You know, a whole society of people, which I think is amazing.
Yeah, for sure. I'll make sure that I tag their website in the description. It's pretty incredible. I have not heard of Noah's House, so I will be definitely checking that out just for my own knowledge. Well, this is lovely. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. I think we could really talk forever, and I hope one day me, you, and Quill can have a hangout.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you for telling me your story and the way that you feel on a daily basis. And I hope it brings awareness and just pure knowledge to the people listening. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for giving me a voice. Like, you have, like, I really I'm so grateful and oh, like I can't believe it, but thank you for letting me talk.
Yes, you're very welcome. And I'm always here to talk for sure.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks so much. I will talk to you soon.
Yes, okay. Thank you, Candace.
Right. Bye.
Bye.